Good evening, Missouri fans, and welcome in to State of the Tigers, our weekly YouTube extravaganza here, brought to you by James Carlton at State Farm Insurance. You can check out James at carltoninsurance.net. You can give him a call at 314-961-4800, which I need to do here in the next couple weeks. Drew King going to be with us in a minute. James is his insurance agent. James is going to be my insurance agent pretty soon, I believe. I hope my current insurance agent is not tuned into YouTube and is not a PowerMizzou.com subscriber. I don't believe that is the case, but we encourage you to get in touch with James. His information will be running across the bottom of the screen throughout the show. Again, if you're listening on the podcast, 314-961-4800 or carltoninsurance.net. Enough bill paying. We're going to bring Drew King onto the screen now. Drew, I'm glad you got a kick out of the intro.
Yeah, shouts to Gabe's current insurance agent. It's nothing personal.
It is nothing personal, man. It's money. James can save me money. The current people have been very kind to us. My insurance agent actually retired a couple years ago. I just met the new one pretty recently when my son had his issues. They've been very kind to us. But, you know, sometimes you just – you need a change of pace. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you just had a bad year, right? Everything didn't go well. You had a bad year and you got to dive into the transfer portal and pick out a whole bunch of new stuff. That's where Dennis Gates is at. That's what we're going to talk about. I do want to let you guys know, appreciate you joining us. Comments, questions, throw them up throughout the show. And after we talk transfer portal with Drew for a little while, I've got all the renderings for you. If you haven't seen them on the South End Zone, we've got those uploaded.
Oh, Gabe, your mic just cut out.
Talk a little bit about the curators meeting in Rolla. You got me now, Drew?
Got him now.
Yeah. So we'll talk about all. So, but first few minutes here are going to be spent with Drew talking transfer portal. Drew, should we talk about what they've gotten or what we're pretty sure they're going?
Let's start with what they've already got, right? Gabe, I know you haven't seen Game of Thrones before. I think you told me that. But in Game of Thrones, there's this place called The Wall, and it's basically like the northernmost part of the country. And it's where like they send prisoners basically to go, and your job is to stare out to the great beyond north. And just see like if anybody tries to come inside, right? And so I've been on the wall for pretty much a month now, right? That's how long it's been since Jacob Cruz has committed, right? He committed March 19th. And
has it really been a month?
Wow. Yeah, it's been a full month now. The White Walkers are finally coming in though, right? So they got Tony Perkins this week. They got Marquez Warrick. It's a brand new backcourt for this team. I think that both guys check a lot of boxes for what Dennis Gates likes out of his guards. And so I'm just curious, what were kind of your initial thoughts on the two guys that they got this week?
Okay, I'll get there in a minute, but I got to put this comment on the screen first, and I'm just going to read it for you, and you can react as you
okay.
Bed is made up nice. Drew must be expecting a visitor. Hey, babe, let's talk about Tim Duncan.
Listen. The bed's always made up nice. It's nothing particular about today.
Freeway Jared, appreciate you, man. You're always here.
But, you know, we're always talking about Tim Duncan in my house. So that's
right. Anybody that visits Drew, the entry to the conversation is Tim Duncan and maybe a little Wemby.
Yes.
You know, Tony Perkins is a guy that the more I looked at him, the more I thought, yeah, this makes sense. Second team All Big Ten player, you know, a guy that has done it at this level, played in NCAA tournaments for Iowa. I got a real good friend that covers Iowa, and what he told me about Perkins was, look, he can't be the best player on an NCAA tournament team, but he can help you get to an NCAA tournament. And I don't think Missouri's bringing him in asking him to be their best player.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, for most of Perkins's career, he was more of a combo guard playing a little bit off the ball. This was the first year where they really had him be the starting point guard, and I felt like he handled it pretty well. I know Iowa had kind of a down season, but I don't know how much of that was Perkins's fault specifically, right? He had a over a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, which is pretty good for somebody who doesn't play point guard full time. The big question for me is his jump shot, right? He's never shot better than 33%. I think he's like career 31%. So that's something that, you know, for a team that didn't shoot as well as Missouri was hoping for, like, I don't know that he's going to be the guy that fixes the issue.
But here's the thing. We've fallen in love with the idea that we have to have nine guys who shoot 40%. Not every guy out there has to shoot 40% from 3-point.
That's fair, right? But you do want guys who can at least knock it down one out of three times, which is close to the national average, right?
Close.
Yeah, and I think he was like below 30 for this year. So it's something that has to improve. He doesn't have to be, you know, Demoy Hodge out there, but you do want to have somebody who defenses have to respect when they pull up, right? Mm-hmm. What I will say, though, is Tony Perkins is really, really good at driving to the rim. That's going to be something that they kind of needed replaced with Sean East going out. He's a guy that can really take it. Go ahead.
Can I interject real quick?
Yeah.
Nick Honor was really good at driving to the rim. What happened after that, maybe not as good, but he was really good at the driving part.
Right. That's another thing too, Gabe, is like Tony Perkins is going to be the most athletic point guard that they've had since Dennis Gates took over, right? When's the last time you saw Sean East or Nick Honor dunk a basketball? Because Tony Perkins is going to have a few dunks this year. He's 6'4", athletic, right? Really strong, can get to the rim, gets to the free throw line a ton. His jumper, again, is a little bit of a work in progress, but I think that you combine that with his facilitating, right? Very efficient, taking care of the ball. And then also, like, he's going to be tough to deal with defensively, right? I think that he's got the size to kind of bully some of the guards in this league. So I think that was probably the biggest pickup of the offseason so far from Dennis Gates.
I want to let you guys know that are watching live here. I see all the comments about the renderings in the meeting today. We are going to do that tonight. I'm just not going to make Drew be here for it because I sat through the meeting. So we're going to do transfer portal first. We will get to that. 270 videos brings up, I think, a good point that kind of helps us transition from Tony Perkins to Mark Kelly, who is the other. I think my headphones just quit. So
we'll okay, perfect.
If I can hear as right. We go along, hang on just a minute. Anyway, you can hear me. So yes. For now, we're talking about Marquez Warrick. And to me, the common theme in these guys is they can get to the free throw line. And look, we just spent an entire season watching a team that couldn't get to the free throw line, right? So I think it's I think it's something that Dennis Gates likes a lot, that he's got guys who might actually shoot some free throws for him next year.
Yeah, so that was one of the stats that I had in my Kings Court column today. You know, Tony Perkins last year shot 300 two-pointers, attempted 300 two-point shots, which was the most by any Missouri player since Jordan Clarkson in 2013-14. And then on Warrick's side, right, he had 173 free throw attempts, which is the most by any Missouri player since Jordan Clarkson, 2013-14, right? So, like two guys that can really get to the rim, at will. Warrick's another guy where like jump shot's a little bit questionable. I have less concerns about it with him because career wise, it's still pretty high. I think he averaged close to 36% through his first three seasons and then just kind of ran into a funk this year. So I feel pretty confident that they can get that number back up. The bigger question for me is like 6'2", 185 pounds. How does that size translate to the SEC? And also on top of that, like he had a pretty high usage rating at Northern Kentucky. How effective is he going to be if he doesn't have the ball as often going up against or playing with, you know, higher caliber teammates here? So those are kind of some of the bigger concerns with Ward. But like you said, like I could see him filling in kind of a DeAndre Golston, a mini-sized DeAndre Golston role where they need him to score in isolation with the shot clock getting late. I think that he's that kind of guy that can cook second units and take his man off the dribble. So I think that that was a really sharp pickup to add along with Tony Perkins. And then we can't forget about Anthony Robinson, who's still on the roster right now. Like, I think that that's a pretty sharp trio for Dennis Gates to go into next season with.
Yeah. Guys, you're going to have to stick with me for a minute here. There may be a little echo, a little audio issue. I'm going to have to run and get another pair of headphones to replace the one in which my battery just died. So we've got three in. We are looking at what we think is a five-man class transfer-wise. We will get to the next two pieces in just a minute. I'm going to ask Drew to filibuster for about 40, 45 seconds talking about kind of the roster math while I take myself out of this and run and get my other headphones. So, Drew, it is your show for, like, as long as it takes me to run downstairs.
Sounds good. Okay, so if anybody has seen Succession out there, there's a episode where they have to go to a convention. They're having a big ceremony about the future of the company. And I think it's Frank who goes, like, Vamp, dang it, Vamp. So that's what I'm doing here. Looking at the roster math, Missouri right now, I think, is one guy over the scholarship limit. We obviously had John Tanjay, who entered the transfer portal earlier this week, right after Tony Perkins committed. So that puts three guys who were on scholarship off the roster in Tanjay, Jesus Carolero Martin, and then Kurt Lewis, who committed to Eastern Tennessee State earlier this week, I believe. And so with Marquez Warwick on the roster, I think we're at 14 scholarship players right now. And so if you're going to add two more transfers on top of that, it's almost a certainty that we're going to see some more departures from this team. I don't know who those are going to be, but it seems like Gabe's back and is ready to answer the question.
I am back. I have absolutely no clue what Drew just said, but I agree with all of it. Appreciate you holding down the fort. So let's get to the questions about what else is left. Mm-hmm. Cody wants to know, do you all think Mark Mitchell is a lock to sign with Missouri? I will put it this way. Nothing is a lock until it happens publicly, especially in this day and age. Even in this day and age, like, guys can commit to Missouri tomorrow and sign, and then they go back in the portal on Tuesday if they want. It's happening. So I'm not going to make promises. It would be very surprising, based on everything we have heard, if Mark Mitchell does not commit to Missouri at some point in the next handful of days, based on what we've heard. I think that, you know, we posted that a few days ago. It's kind of starting to get around now. A lot of national guys are kind of predicting it. Look, Drew, you correct me if I'm wrong. I think there are some people that are a little down on Mark Mitchell. I think he is Missouri's best player day one if they get him. You disagree with that?
I don't.
Okay. So here is what I can tell you on Mitchell. He averaged 11.5 points, 6 rebounds a game at Duke, which by Duke standards, this was not a great Duke team, but they were a 4 seed. They won a whole bunch of games. They were in the mix for an ACC title. This was a very good – Missouri fans would be thrilled if next season was the season that Duke just had, right? I have talked to people that know a lot more basketball than I do. What they tell me about the Duke system is it kind of turns guys into robots. In other words, you get there and they want you to do two or three things, and those are the only two or three things you need to do. And look, it obviously works very well because they have a lot of guys that do these two or three things and then these two or three things. And what it all adds up to is a team that has no weaknesses. I mean, that team had Kyle Filipowski to be, you know, he's going to be an NBA pick to be the inside guy. They had shooters. They had a point guard. They wanted Mark Mitchell to play defense and rebound and clean up junk around the rim. And he did it very, very well. If he can average 11.5 and 6 on that Duke team, I would expect those numbers to significantly increase on a Missouri team where he is going to be much more of an offensive focal point than he was in Durham, North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I texted this to you, like, kind of what he did at Duke this year had some shades of Kobe Brown in it, right? Just somebody who was so physically strong down low, could really clean the glass, despite not being the tallest person on the court, and just had some really good finishes around the rim through contact. That's a guy who would have really, really helped this Missouri team last year. And now knowing the pieces that they're going to bring in is going to really, really help them this year if and when he decides to commit. So, yeah, like, I think that he's a very good finisher around the basket. He's another guy who has shown flashes that of a three-point shot, right? Like, not a terrible shot. He's at least willing to shoot it, right? And
shot it well last year, did not shoot it well this year.
Correct. But a guy who's willing to shoot it, unlike some players on last year's roster, right? And so, yeah, I think that he schematically, like, he's another guy that would fit in really well, taking over Noah Carter's old role as the power forward spot. I can see some lineups where he might even be a small ball five. So he's a guy that also, like, would check a lot of boxes of what Missouri needs heading into next season.
Here is the upside. And I want to be careful to say this is not my prediction. This is the upside of what could happen with Mark Mitchell. You take a guy who his first 2 years shot the three a little bit better than Kobe Brown shot the three, and you find a way to, I don't want to say make him the shooter Kobe was as a senior, because I'm not sure that's likely, but get him much closer to that, right? Mm-hmm. You improve his percentage, let's say by 10%. Let's say you turn him in from a 29% shooter into a 39% shooter. You have a first-round NBA draft pick on your hand because he is more athletic than Kobe. I mean, this, is, again, was a McDonald's All-American coming out of high school who hasn't maybe put McDonald's All-American numbers up, but he's been doing it at a place that, like, he's surrounded by McDonald's All-American, yeah. Right? Yeah. Not everybody can put up those numbers. So I want to say again, I am not saying that Missouri is getting a more athletic Kobe Brown-level player. I'm saying that's the upside potential and hope of what they're getting.
Correct, right? And important thing to remember, too, unlike the other transfers that Missouri's brought in so far, Mark Mitchell is somebody with multiple years of eligibility left, right? So,
And let's be honest, you hope he doesn't use them.
Right,
you hope he does all that next year and he's gone.
Because he's got that kind of potential. Right. And I think we said at one point this year, like, getting a Dennis Rodman type of player would fix a lot of issues. Like, that's a Dennis Rodman kind of player who can clean the glass for you. On top of that, like, I've seen clips where he's able to switch positionally, defensively a lot too, which would really help with Mizzou's scheme. We know that they like to go after the ball a lot, but Mark Mitchell is athletic enough to defend guards out on the perimeter. So I think that he would just clear up so many issues for the Tigers.
Okay, the fifth transfer, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one. I'm just going to give you guys the thumbnail sketch. It's Javon Porter. We've all known, like, the expectation has been that this kid's coming to Missouri for, I don't know, 3 weeks, however long he's been in the portal now, maybe even longer than that. I still think that's probably the case. I don't want to put a time frame on this one. We're not going to dwell on it. None of it's his fault. Javon's family has a lot going on this week. Mm-hmm. Let's just leave it at that, right? There's a lot going on with the Porter family. I'm not sure him making a transfer commitment today, tomorrow is top of mind or the most PR savvy thing, right? I think Missouri still has that excellent shot, in good shape. I don't know when it would be announced. Look, it's possible he ends up going somewhere else or they fill a spot, whatever. But that's what's going on with Javon Porter. I didn't want to spend a lot of time on that because the last one, Sam Thom is asking, do we even have a shot at Jaden Quaintance? Rob Cassidy wrote a story today basically saying that Arkansas's biggest competition is probably Missouri. I have had Kentucky people tell me he's probably not going to Kentucky. He is on a visit to Louisville right now. Missouri's going to try. Will it be successful? I don't know. But like, Drew, do you agree? That's a guy, if he says, yeah, I want to come, you find a way to make it work.
100%. Yeah. Because like guys like that don't grow on trees. I think that were he to commit, he would be Mizzou's starting center day one. I think that he's got that kind of level of talent. He's a guy who's would be projected to be a one and done had he not reclassified. Since he did, though, he's going to have 2 years wherever he ends up. So, yeah, like I think that that's a guy you take him and figure out the roster math later. Right. Whatever has to happen.
So, you, look, if anything develops on that, we'll let you guys know. We'll see if he comes out of the Louisville visit uncommitted. I assume he will. Arkansas will be a factor. Missouri is trying and will be involved. That's what we can say right now. So last thing for you, Drew, we'll kind of go with this question from Cody. Let's say they don't get Jaden Quaintance, right? And they do get Javon Porter. Who's the starting center on this team?
I'm going to go with somebody Cody did not mention. I think it's still going to be Jordan Butler. The reason being, I think that they'll probably put a little bit of weight on him this offseason. He's coming in with more experience than both Peyton Marshall and Trent Burns. And I just don't see Javon Porter being center-sized, right? I think that he's just as skinny as Jordan Butler right now. So I think that Jordan's a little bit taller. I think that they can put a little bit more weight on him. That would be my pick for the starter right now.
Yeah, and Drew, you may have addressed this while I was on my headphone mission. Brock asked, do you think all the freshmen stay? At this point, I've got to say no. I think somebody leaves. I don't know who, but I think somebody leaves.
Right, that was – I did say that, not specifically about the freshmen, but with three guys coming in, you've had three guys go out, right? If you're going to add two more on top of that, that means that somebody's got to come off of scholarship. So whether that be through the transfer portal or by going the Caleb Brown or Mabor Majok route where you just take an NIL deal and be a walk-on. Right. But that's how it has to kind of happen for this team if they're going to take that many newcomers.
All right. Well, Drew has spent 22 minutes sitting in front of a computer here after really a month of sitting in front of a computer. So we certainly appreciate it. Drew, I'm going to let you go unless you want to sit here and watch it look at pretty AI renderings of a football stadium.
I think I'm good on that front. Thanks, Gabe.
All right. Have a good one. That's Drew King talking Mizzou hoops, portal stuff. We wanted to get that in. We're going to have Gerard Hamilton on the show next week, actually live from Detroit covering the NFL draft. So I wanted to make this a basketball show. And now we're going to turn our attention to today's proceedings. A lot of you have had questions about what went on. So we can go two ways. We can go athletic director. We can go football stadium. We're going to start. It's my show. I get to choose. We're going to start football stadium. I'm just going to start flashing up the renderings that Mizzou released today from the DLR group, which is going to do the North End Zone facility and really stadium-wide improvements. North End Zone is going to be the focus. That's the pretty part of this. They're going to do new Wi-Fi, better sound, bathrooms, concessions, concourses, LED lights, ribbon boards all over the stadium. But the North End Zone complex is the focus. And I'm just going to kind of scroll through these images for you guys. This would be looking from, let me figure out my directions. I guess north of the stadium, across Stadium Boulevard. You can see the tunnel that goes under stadium. That's one thing they talked about they were going to improve. Then outside the stadium to the North End Zone is this big plaza area. That's an area they're talking about tailgating, open to the public for gathering before the games, all that. You can see kind of the glass windows and all that. This is going to be the entryway. This is where you'd walk into the stadium. The glass windows above, that area in there is obviously going to be for suite seating and stuff during the game, but that is also going to be available for banquets, for the public, for, you know, different organizations around the city to use throughout the year. Like, football games only happen on 7 Saturdays a year, right? So that is going to be an area where other people can have and other organizations can have things. And I'm sure there will be a fee for that. That's another way to make revenue off of this for Missouri. This is the view from what they are calling, it's slipping my mind right now what they're calling it. The Rock M Club, I believe, is what they are calling it. This basically is replacing the Bunker Club. The Bunker Club right now is that kind of field level seating at the south end zone. That is going to be turned into a recruiting area for Eli Drinkwitz. So the Bunker Club is now moving. This is actually underneath the hill. Above that ceiling is the hill and the Rock M. This is going to be field level suites called the Rock M Club in the south end zone. This is kind of the view, obviously, from the stadium. Now, we were talking, the Rock M looks like lit up and there's some weird stuff. That's probably just an AI rendering. I don't really know. I think the Rock M is going to remain fairly unchanged. You can see on either side of the hill, they have loge seating. I'm told those are about 300 seats on each side. For group things and stuff like that. This is your suite level. Up on level 2 is, I believe there are 28 suites there. And then up on level 3, I forget the name of it. They have a name for it, but it's basically kind of an area like standing suites and stuff like that. So the 2 luxury suites on levels 2 and 3. And this is just kind of a view from the other side. Look, guys, I'm not a big, you know, facilities, like I always say, it's 72 and dry in the press box. They serve bad food, but they have Wi-Fi and I can do my job. So that's my game experience. Like, I don't have the game experience you guys do. So it doesn't really matter to me. Like, somebody asked me, what would it take for you to be impressed? And I said, with the renderings, I said, I'm probably not going to be impressed. I don't really care. I was impressed. It looked good. I've been doing this for 21 years now. And this is the first time I can remember, like, nobody's mad. Everybody is like, Kyle, hey, this looks cooler than I thought it would. This looks like this project, you know, is kind of blowing people away. I've seen comments from some national people, you know, really, really like what they saw out of the rendering. So I think very well done, certainly by the DLR group, by the board, by everybody that had a part in this. Marcy Curtin got it across the finish line. Certainly, she's the interim AD. I know there are some comments about Desiree Reed-Francois. We will get to that. Started this thing rolling a little bit. Certainly, obviously, was not here to see it through. This vision has been developed since then. And like I said, we will talk about that and kind of go through some of the other results from the curators meeting. But overall, I think everybody came away very impressed with what they saw. And again, there's a lot of positive comments about it. And I haven't seen anybody say they don't like this thing. Now, look, what it looks like when it actually gets built, is that what it looks like in these pictures? We'll see. But it's a $250 million project. It is, I think, everything you could want. I mean, I asked Eli Drinkwitz today. I said, okay, you got the indoor facility. You got the new practice fields. You got the south end zone. Now you're going to have the north end zone. Everybody wants to know what's next. So what's next? And he said, beating Murray State. Like, he's making $9 million. They have given him everything he wants. With this project, they have said, we are going to give football absolutely every single thing it could possibly want before we worry about anything else. I'm not going to say it's impossible he leaves, but I don't know where he'd go. I don't know where else he would have a situation where he has all this. He has NIL money that is among the best in the country. It's maybe not number one, but it's top 15. Everybody is behind his program. And he's doing it at a place where, honestly, if he goes 8-4, 9-3 every year, they're not going to want to fire him. Like, you can go to Ohio State and you can go to Texas A&M and have some of these same resources that Missouri has and have the same support Missouri has and the same facilities Missouri has. The difference is the expectation level at those places. And look, the goal is for Eli Drinkwitz to get the expectation level at Missouri to that level where, hey, no, 8-4 is not good enough. But right now it is. Right now it just is. You go 8-4 at Missouri, you're going to coach here for basically as long as you want, or at least for a long, long time. So all of those things, giving him all of that, I really think, like, I think this says a lot about Missouri's chances to have Eli Drinkwitz be the head coach here for a long time. So this is kind of the other thing from today, AD stuff. Cole Carter says, the biggest takeaway from today, DRF brought a cheap and uninspiring project to the board and they laughed and told her to kick rocks. I mean, that's obviously a little harsh. There's some truth in it. The plan in November, when it was presented to the board, was not this. Now, obviously that, you know, her plan wasn't this, but also from everything I understand, nobody was pushing for something like this at that time, or at least when that was being developed. This is a different architect. This is a different budget. A $62 million donation helps to kickstart that, right? And I'm not saying that Desiree was blameless and the BLT is awful. Look, the board did a very good job today. They got a hell of a project put out there. Everybody's happy with it. They did a good presentation. I got nothing bad to say. I've had my issues with them in the past, no question. I still have some questions about the way things, what led to the departure and how the search has gone, but I'm not, this isn't the day to fight against Missouri's board of curators. I'm not trying to do that in any way. I think it is overly simplistic and unfair to make the statement Cole is making, but yes, this is not the plan that was there in November. There's no question about that. I think there are multiple reasons for that, but whatever. Sometimes the ends justify the means, right? You got here today. This is a good thing for Eli Drinkwitz. This is a good thing for Missouri football. This is a good thing for Mizzou fans and everyone who is still involved with the University of Missouri. Desiree Reed Francois is not. This, to me, kind of puts that in the rearview mirror. Then hiring another athletic director will, to me, officially put that. I'm done talking about it when they hire the new AD. They get a replacement. Whoever it's going to be, it's going to be. We hope to have some information on that in the coming days. I think they'll have a hire made within 2 weeks. It wouldn't shock me if they had a hire made by the end of next week. Show Me Football is asking, and I kind of went into this, expand more on what the renderings mean for the school's commitment to Drinkwitz. And that's what I think it is. I mean, what was said over and over today was we wanted to be more SEC. I mean, that's the layman's translation of everything they said. Again, I'm not necessarily big on this, so I'm not the right person to address, but I know Missouri fans are big on what do other SEC fans think about our stadium. I know other SEC fans have looked at this stadium and says, well, that's not an SEC stadium. It is going to be. In 2026, it is going to stack up with anything there is. Marcy Girton said today, with everything they've done, they will have as good a football infrastructure as anybody in the country. Now, is that true? I don't nitpick, go back and forth. But, like, you know, it's not going to hold 108,000 like Neyland Stadium or Kyle Field. It's not going to have the history of Sanford Stadium, you know. But you look at those renderings and those pictures, I mean, it looks like a modern, big-time football atmosphere. That's up there. If the real life thing looks like this picture on your screen right now, and if you're listening on the podcast, I don't know what to tell you. Go back, find the YouTube replay, or just find the rendering somewhere. You know what I'm talking about. But if this is what comes to real life, that's big time. There's no question about it. And there's, you know, again, I don't personally really care what anybody else says. I think a lot of people care way too much about what other people say. But it was obviously important to the board, important to Eli Drinkwitz. we want to have a big time stadium. I asked him today, I said, how do you kind of weigh in the era of NIL, how do you weigh how important facilities are, how much you spend on that versus NIL, things like that? And he said, it's all important. Like, you can have the best stadium in the world. If you don't have NIL, it's not going to matter. You can have great NIL, but you can't have a rat hole stadium. That's my word, not his. So you've all got to, you got to have all of it, right? And Missouri is on the way to having all of it. Now, that does not guarantee that, you know, obviously they're going to be great on the football field, but it certainly doesn't hurt. Andrew Kessel, appreciate you dropping a little super chat there. I'll pass that $5 on to Drew King. I think you left it for him. He is gone from the chat now, but appreciate that. And Drew King still hanging around, says that the Drews got to stick together. Got a few more comments. We got Alex Schiffer in the chat. Schiff, what's going on, man? Okay, Philip doesn't like the bunker club idea. Not, I mean, it's already there. It's just on the other end of the stadium. You don't have to sit there if you don't want to. I'm not sure what the drawback, I mean, what the drawback of having the option is, you know. Let's see. A few more comments. Skyler says program's about to really take off. Drink has the support of a big project. Shows we're serious. No, look, this feels like now, it is hard to overstate the importance of this fall, guys. It's the most anticipated football season in 15 years. You're going to have a new AD. This stadium project was just announced. You need to raise $250 million. If he goes out and has the season that you guys hope he's going to have, it could be a huge springboard. If he goes out and goes 8-4, does that derail everything? No. Go 6-6. Then we'd have some, then it'll be a different tone, but I don't see Missouri going 6-6 with this team and this schedule. So it really does feel like this spring is kind of an inflection point for Missouri. Or I'm sorry, this fall, where the trampoline is there. Missouri, and by Missouri, I mean Eli Drinkwitz and his football team, they got to go jump on. And they got to get the big bounce. And if they hit it right, a lot of really good things could be on the way. So want to address this. A couple more questions. Cole's asking if the new scoreboard for this season will be scrapped. So they're going to have a new video board this year and sound improvements. It may only be there for 2 years. I asked specifically about that after the meeting was over today, because we only got one question in the meeting, but I was asking some people afterwards. They're going to have the new video board and sound system improvements for this year because, like, they aren't sure this one will last. Like, they were scared last year during games it was just going to quit. So they have to have a new one. It's going to cost, I think it was like $1.8 million. I have the work order somewhere in my email inbox. But, so these things can be broken down and put back together, but I'm not sure that they'll just take the one they put in and then put it on top of the stadium. They may get a new one in 2026. I mean, when you're talking about $250 million, 1.8 isn't that big a deal. So if you spend 1.8 to get through the next 2 years, then so be it. You can call this a $252 million project instead of 250. But there will still be a new video board and sound system this fall. Mark Fenton says the only thing they should make happen is the new capacities at 65. That number should be 70. I disagree, Mark. They sold out 5 straight weeks, and that was great. But it was 5 weeks. It wasn't 5 years. They didn't sell out at the start of the season. What if Missouri does go 8-4 next year? They selling out 62,000 in 2 years? I don't know, maybe, but maybe not. I like 65. The idea is not more seats. The idea is more expensive, more revenue generating seats. That's what they've done here. And that's not just at Missouri. That's the trend across all sports, luxury seats and premium seat licenses and all that stuff. You fill up 65 for 3 or 4 straight years? Awesome. Feel free, find another place to put 5,000 seats. But make Missouri fans show they're going to do that before. Because back when Missouri moved to the SEC, everybody talked about how they had to get an 80,000-seat stadium, right? And I remember talking to one of the football coaches at that time, and he said, Doesn't make any sense. He said, okay, we've got 65 now. What looks better, 62,000 in a 65,000 seat stadium or 70,000 in an 80,000 seat stadium? The 80,000 seat stadium has 10,000 empty seats. The other one has 3,000. It looks better. Nobody sits on TV and goes, hey, that's, it's hard to tell the difference between 65 and 70 or 70 and 75 on TV. You only know it if you know what the place holds. You fill up every seat and you do it for 3 or 4 years and you do it maybe even when the team's not 11-2. You do it for a 7-5 season or you do it for a couple 8-4 seasons. Then if you want to talk about adding more seats, I'm there. I don't think you need to do it just yet by any means. Some appreciate the super chat. Appreciate you being here. You're one of our regular viewers. A lot of you guys are here every week. Maybe a lot of you guys, hey, you just said, hey, I know he's going to show pretty pictures, so I'm going to jump on tonight. If you're one of our newer people, we're at a couple hundred people right now. Appreciate everybody being here. Like the channel, comment, subscribe, share it, do all of those things. If you're listening on the podcast, leave us positive reviews. More important than any of those things, because like, look, I want our YouTube channel to get more people and it makes money and all that. But what I really want you to do here is I want you to get in touch with James Carlton. He's been with us for a long time now. He has been our sponsor for a lot of these shows for close to 2 years, and he's going to continue next year. You get in touch with him at carltoninsurance.net. You call him at 314-961-4800, and he's going to hook you up with the best insurance rates he can find. He's going to talk to you. Maybe you get to share James' suite in 2026 at Furrow Field, right? I know James is going to have one of those. I know he's fired up about the renderings today and the future of Mizzou football. So give him a call. He's a big Mizzou fan, got a great staff. He's going to take care of you. Appreciate all of you guys being here. Like I said, we are going to do a show next week with Jerod Hamilton, probably Tuesday or Wednesday night. He's going to be in Detroit covering the NFL draft. So we're going to do a kind of an NFL draft preview special next week. Over the weekend, who knows? Maybe there's a couple portal commits. Maybe we need to hop back on. Maybe Missouri football has a big weekend. Maybe they hire an athletic director. Anything could happen. We don't have a set schedule. We promise you we're going to be with you once a week, maybe more. But appreciate all you guys for joining us tonight, and we will talk to you next time.